Hello, listeners. Disembodied Voice speaking. This week's episode is Season 1, Episode 12, The Voices. This episode involves descriptions of body horror and graphic violence and gore. Please proceed with caution if these are things you're sensitive to. The content warnings and transcript link can be found in the show notes. Enjoy!
This is Jamie Locke, traveling anthropology and archaeology student, studying rituals, currently stationed on the Melody Method Church dig site. They call themselves the Voices. They sound like a twisted choir of high-pitched voices, all of their words getting caught around each other. There's a tightness to their throats when they speak, sort of cold, drawn-in vocal quality. When they speak, it sounds like it hurts, bloodying their throats and slicing them up. When they open their mouths, blood drips out. The first one is old. Her limbs are gnarled like an ancient tree, her skin the color of amber, and her lips are cracked and stained red from the constant blood that pours from her lips. She looks with glassy eyes. Her voice sounds like cracking ice, curling and rolling over in the waves of icy cold. She speaks as if there are ice cubes in her mouth, and her breath is cold. Her hands are cold. She's dead, I know it. The second one is a ball of blistering heat. Her red hair curls down her back, licking at her shoulders with intensity. The orange bright and burning, the red deep and threatening. She has yellow eyes, like a goat, and her face is pink and blistered with peeling, screaming patches of burnt skin. She smells like a cigarette smoke and dynamite. Her voice is low and rumbling. I know if I let her touch me, I'll burn. The third has leathery, parchment-feeling skin, rough to the touch. She grips her face with long, brittle nails, leaving trails of blood and torn skin behind, peeling off her face in little flecks of paper. Her eyes are cold, dead, shade of grave dirt brown. Her skin is covered in words, and she tries to peel the words away. She can't. I know what she wants. I know it deeply. I don't want the words either. It was after the first time that I met them that the first word appeared. Something simple, just small, on the inside of my elbow. Justice. But I don't have any tattoos. It wasn't there before. It won't come off. 2 days later, the second word appeared, on the sole of my foot. Snake. I have two on each kneecap now as well. Winter and summer. And prayer is over my heart. Where are they coming from? I panicked at first. I ran down to the local Instacare screaming bloody murder, unable to breathe, but when I ran inside, Lena Elspeth was there. Her eyes followed me, watched my breath catch, and she must have seen the panic in my eyes. I know she did, and she judged. So I straightened my back and gulped down a breath and told the local doctor I was there to check on my concussion. Lena looked away after that. Leo noticed the other day. He grabbed my arm, told me my new tattoo looked cool. I couldn't say anything. I guess maybe I was hoping no one else could see it, because that might mean whatever's happening to me is just inside my head. But it's not. It's real. I don't want it to be real. I don't want to be crazy. I'd take anything over this. Whatever they'd send me to, I'd take it all over this. I wish I was seeing things. That sounds insensitive. I wish it wasn't real. After I talked to Leo and Emil, that's when I met the voices. There's the answer to that scream you asked about, Mr. Arthur. I mean, I'm fine. All intact and everything. But they came out of nowhere, in the dark and dripping blood. Ever since I met them, I can't get warm or cold. I freeze and wrap myself up in blankets, and then I burn, and I throw them all off, and it repeats again. Sometimes my skin looks like it's peeling off like paper. The next morning, I wake up to another word there. And who am I supposed to tell? Other than my tapes. The others won't believe me. I guess that's the worst part of it all. They'll think I'm in trouble, they'll be worried for my mental health, and I know it's real, I wish it wasn't, but that doesn't matter because they won't believe me. What do I do? I think you know something about this. I think it's your doing. Somehow, ever since I started reading cases from you, I've become something else. I'm becoming something other. Please, Mr. Arthur, I'm tired. I want answers. I deserve them. Am I even human anymore? I don't feel like much of anything. And the others. This is the part that really might be in my head. The others look strange. Sometimes I'll go to talk to Emil, and I'll want to call him something else. The same with Leo and January and Booker. I don't know what I want to call them, but it isn't their names. It's almost like it's something deep inside of them. I've never felt psychic. I've never been able to read energies. But lately, all of my senses feel electric. And I'm drawn to certain places. I've started pacing the pulpit circle, an area of the church that remained a perfect circle even after the explosion. It's hard gray stone with little bits of moss growing in the cracks. And I feel a tug under my rib cage, like someone's hooked me by my bones and is pulling me tightly to the center. I touch the stone and I see a cold, dark night and blood. Tears. Then another. A different night, though. Someone else's tears. Someone else's blood. Some days, I think it might even be mine. There's a woman, occasionally. Not the one from the woods. Someone else. She has the most piercing blue eyes, and she looks straight at me. I'm standing in the middle of the circle, and she screams something at me. I can't hear her. The wind rushes so loudly around me that I can't hear anything except for the unmistakable crackle of a flame. My mouth is moving, but I don't know the words yet. So they just feel like sounds. At the very edge of the woods, they watch me in the pulpit circle, their voices rising up in laughter. More reports! They chime. And I scream at them. That makes them laugh more. Eventually, a long, spindly hand of a shadow comes to rest on each of their shoulders, and the laughter ceases. The shadow pulls them back into the woods, and the figure hesitates, reaching a hand to me. I stare at the hand. Even though I'm a ways away from the forest, I know if I reach out, I'll find myself right at the edge, with him looming over me. I see what happens if I take his hand. Leo splayed out over a rock, it piercing through his stomach, surrounded by dark blood. January crushed under a pillar, her bones cracking and her lungs deflating as her organs give out from pressure one by one. Emil leaning over another rock, his head bashed in, brains and blood leaking out in a pool around his hair. Booker, clutching a tape to his chest, hung upside down from the archway at the front of the church. Blood dripping trails down his body. His eyes wide open in surprise. Dead, 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 dead. All because of me. And yet, I see what happens when I take his hand. The grass of the forest is warm on my feet. The words cover my skin, but I don't care. Flowers bloom from my hair. The trees laugh around me, and I wrap my arms tight around my chest, soaking up the sun. I can't remember the last time it was sunny here. It's always drizzling. I want it so badly. The hook under my ribs digging deep. My fingertips dripping blood as my hands twitch with indecision next to my sides. I want to take his hand. And then I see it again. The blood. The gore. The shocked horror frozen on the faces of my dead friends, unable to comprehend what's done this to them. And I pull back, away as fast as I can, stumbling out of the pulpit circle and back to the messy ruins. The hand blinks out of existence as if it were never there. Emil found me after the first time, shaking, curled up in a ball against the cold stone, trying to remember how to breathe. He held me tightly, and when I pulled away, his shirt was wet with tears. I don't remember crying. He didn't ask. I would say it was strange, but I'm thankful for it, you know? Anyone else would have. He let it be. Every time since is worse. It never gets better. The hook sinks deeper each time, and every time I get closer to taking his hand. And then I hear January's laugh, or smell Booker's cooking, and I jump out of the circle. Sun sounds nice. Flowers sound nice. But not at the cost of them. I really don't expect answers from you at this point, Mr. Arthur. I'm not sure what your pardon this is, or really what this is. The only thing I know is that whatever you're playing at, I won't let you hurt my friends. Jamie Locke, signing off.
Ritualistic Podcast would like to acknowledge that we create our stories on stolen land. The land we occupy belongs to the Eastern Shoshone and Goshute peoples. This episode starred Jay Short as Jamie Locke. The ritualistic theme, which played at the beginning and end of the episode, was composed by Sophia Weaver. The episode was written by Morgan Champagne, sound designed by Seth Stone, and produced by Morgan Champagne and Seth Stone. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in a little while.